everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Garage Media Junkies. My name is Chris Espinoza, and across from me, as always, is the lovely Hugo Mesa.
Yay, I'm lovely. Even if you don't believe it. I think at this point, I will be interesting to people's opinions of like what image they have of me based on podcast. Like, listen to podcast.
I mean, our faces used to be on the podcast page for a while.
Yeah, I think we're going to go back. I need to add Sydney now.
Then have Sydney's face on there.
But thank you to be back. Episode 65. We're close to 64. 60. See, well, I mean, everybody's waiting 69. I mean, at this point, we're already hyped. So we hype it a lot.
We got to deliver.
We need to deliver. I think we deliver a Crush Cast.
We delivered on Crush Cast, but if you actually remember, that was episode 10. Episode 10 for all of you who are wondering, episode 10.
Episode 10?
Yeah.
Dang. Okay.
Because we started probably back in early November of like 2016. I know. I think 17. I think it was 17. No, 16. No. Oh my God. Yeah, it was probably 16. Either way, we did it, and then we did it towards Valentine's Day.
Oh, yeah, right.
And
yeah.
So it was only like 2 months had passed.
Dang.
So November, December, January, and then we were already into February because we took a few weeks off for the holidays.
Yeah, we have a few breaks, but for the most part, we're every weekend.
Every week we've been doing it. This last few weeks before the Rick Grimes episode was the longest break that we had taken. We went over that. But yeah, so we'll do that one. Hugo, I know, has already been starting to make his list. I need to go make my list for the 69 cast. We got a month out. You have a month out to write in what you guys
think.
We
have, like, I think it's going to be interesting. We have such different perspective from, like, you know, your side, mine, and Sydney.
We're going to get a very eclectic mix of films here.
Probably, because to be honest, like, most of the movies that I watch, they were kind of sexualized or like related to sex and sensuality or whatever. Like, a lot of them are in Spanish, like from the Spanish market.
Really?
Yeah. I thought it was a funny thing in Mexico because there's not a fact, but there's a pattern with Mexican films. It's either dumb soap operas with expensive production, but it still are the same stupid soap operas, or slow artsy fartsy or something related to sex, like nudes.
I mean, because it sells. That's like, it sells. Well, it used spectrum. To because that was and again, it's gonna be really interesting because we're all, I mean, Hugo and I are around the same age. Sydney's a few years behind us, so Hugo and I were raised in a time without the internet, and you know, I'm not gonna spoil anything, but I mean, some of my films that go on there is just because that was what was released at the time and what you had on VHS versus DVD, being able to play it quietly.
Because I guess my golden channel nights doesn't count.
Yeah,
those were like actually self born. So let's forget about those. Well, the funny thing before we jump into topic, you know, to address the golden channel thing. So those movies we have cable. At my house, and I was like a few of the people to have cable when that thing started.
Right, yeah, we've gone over that before, yeah.
So the programming of the channels were based on Mexico City, and you need to know that there's 2 hours difference from Mexico City to Tijuana, where I was born. So in Mexico City, it was 12 midnight, but in TJ, it was 10 p.m.,
Oh, so when all the late night movies would come on, it would be on extra early.
And I was like 14 or 15, so I was still like, at that point, I could stay longer watching TV and my parents will go to sleep. So.
Nailed it.
And I was like, dude, hey, bro, you watch last night Golden Channel thing with the college girl? Yeah. You know, because that's where we talk when we're in middle school. And
that's exactly how we all sounded. Exactly. Our voices dropped and we were like elongated vowel sounds.
Bruh. Even you pause it. But yeah, that was funny. But yeah, Golden Channel doesn't count for this episode.
No,
it has to be
like a film.
I think film, yeah.
A film or a piece of media that like...
Video games, I don't think...
No, and we'll get into it, but they could count because there were some video games where...
God of War, I remember.
Where you had boobs and stuff, but I mean, even things like, you know, Dead or Alive, which were... these very over-exaggerated boobs, and they were polygons at the time, but you would still work your butt off to try to find, like, some cheat code.
Lara Croft.
Yeah, or Lara Croft, and that you would be like, there's some cheat code out there that can make it all.
Yeah, I think, well, I don't know if we're going to focus exactly, because their life was entirely, like, boobs and let's show it. Yeah, it wasn't anything behind it. I think we're more towards movies that significantly sort of awake our sexuality in a way, I guess.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's 69.
It'll be
everything counts, so don't miss that one. So today, radical change of topics, as always. Sadly, we all know at this point in news that Stan Lee passed away. And I think it's been a while since he's having showing signs of like getting sick or like weak in a way, you know. I mean, the guy is, it was old.
It was 95, I believe.
Holy shit. Yeah, like I only wish to last that long.
I mean, let's see. If we did the math, I mean, he was around his like early 80s when the Spider-Man movies really started to come out, and he would start doing the cameos in the Spider-Man films.
Right.
And even when you're 70, you know, I look at tons of people who are in the 70s and they're in terrible form and shape.
Terrible shape.
So for him to just be that much, he's filled with life, and you watch any panels and videos or interviews with him, and he's just a happy-go-lucky dude who's just happy that you're reading his stuff. So to be 95 when you finally go, and like Hugo said, it wasn't until the last year or so that he really started to show signs of deterioration.
Slowing down. It's funny because I feel like he was also another fan. Like, enjoy everything just as another of his fans.
Yeah.
Like, all the media stuff and talking to them.
And I think for him, it was because, and when you think about creativity, everybody looks at Stan Lee like he is some god amongst men.
Right,
that he was this person that made all these things. And the reality of it is, he didn't. Stan Lee joined towards that golden age of comics of having to churn out stuff day by day. You talk to anybody who works in comics, and they will tell you it is a grueling place to be when you're an up-and-comer or you're starting out, because you just have to churn out ideas. You have no idea what's going to stick. Hence why we have things like Spider-Man, and we have things like Batman, and Ratman, and all these different types, because you just wanted anything to stick. The difference with Stan Lee's characters is he always gave them a quirk. He made sure to make them likable, but they had their flaws. Relatable. In some way, shape, or form to the audience. Now, not all of them that he made were excellent, but he did make a lot of them, and he was really open to creatively collaborating with other people, which was really highly successful. He didn't just hoard it all to himself. He had Jack Kirby to work with, and he would just run with it, and he was having fun. But he had no problem letting other people take that mantle and write too, and add to these things. Now, he made some great characters and story arcs, but he didn't make all of them. But he was the person that planted that seed.
Yeah, I think he is one of those persons that are awesome to see the potential of something.
Right.
You know, bringing the idea like, okay, this can work, just maybe change this and that, but like, you're on the right path, like, you know.
Yeah, send you on
your way. Encourage you, yeah. And also, I was thinking like, I think he's kind of like the Steve Jobs of the comics in a way.
You know what, you're kind of right. You just make an idea, you hope somebody else can help you.
But like that pusher person, like, no, you don't quit.
Yeah.
You keep pushing until we made it.
Right. And with him making these things, you never know if they're going to work. They did, they didn't. And when they did, he was like, awesome, I'm going to keep doing this stuff. And he did. And he was happy to do it. And he was happy to inspire others to do it. And if you look back on anything, Stan Lee never says anything bad about any of the other publishing houses. He never talks about any of these wars that all the fanboys do. That, Marvel, DC,
Xbox, PS4.
Right. Just be happy you have something to like.
Yeah.
And, you know, he grew up in a time and an era where you didn't have that. You didn't have anything like that.
That's not, well, it wasn't the immediate answer.
Not, at least not with entertainment. when it came to something like that. I mean, movie studios and corporations back then were always vying for whatever, but most people didn't really care about which studio made what. They just wanted their movies. Whereas when you got something like a something as minuscule as a comic book, but then to see it literally go from nothing,
right,
the lowest common brow form of entertainment, to he at least, and this is where my heart at least gets full, is he at least got to see it get built into, it is now the forerunner and the most successful thing in any part of film history.
Yeah, I mean, Disney bought the damn studio.
He got to see the world's greatest conglomerate corporation absorb his company. Yeah, a piece of his company, and then he's forever immortalized in this company and synonymous with this brand. When you think of Disney, what do you think of?
Definitely not superheroes or like that kind of content.
But like when I say Disney, the first character that usually comes to mind is you think of Mickey Mouse or Walt Disney. It's just synonymous. You know, you say something like Apple, you think of Steve Jobs. When I say you think Marvel, it's not any one character that comes to mind. It's Stan Lee.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think at the end of the day, that's the legacy of somebody like Stan Lee. And like you say, it's so awesome. In so many cases, like, people get like these attention or like recognize their work until they pass.
Yeah.
And they never see come to life or like see them how big a deal become what they did.
Right, yeah. Like a good example of that is the guy who invented Coca-Cola.
Yeah.
He made this drink, just like soda pop, like anything else. I mean, obviously adding real cocaine into his drink, but to know that formula, he was just like, you know, he died not ever realizing that it was gonna sell to be this big thing. That's a terrible feeling to have as a person that makes something that tries to give the world something back. Most authors, literature writers, feel that way.
Right.
It's not until they're dead and then everybody reads it like 20, 30, 40, 50 years from now and they go, that guy was pretty good. He was ahead of his time.
Yeah, pretty much.
But to be that person, to get to like literally be in that cultural event as it's happening and not let it go to your head.
Oh, yeah. He seems like pretty, you know, laid back and like, oh, you're Stan Lee. Well, yeah, cool. But like, you know, like, I'm glad that you enjoyed it because that's it. Like there's no ego, or at least from what I see, there wasn't
big ego
from here.
And he was always a big proprietor of Spider-Man is as much of your life as it is mine. It belongs to you as much as it belongs to me. I'm just glad that you like this character and that this character speaks to you in a certain way. So he understood that fundamental storytelling ability with people. Because I know for you, this whole superhero genre, you're kind of over it in movies.
Yeah, but that's the thing, because I need to explain to people that are listening that in Mexico it exists, the comic, but I don't think it was as huge of a deal or like here in US. I think here in US, like, it was a weekly thing that you can go and buy a comic.
You could. Now, Hugo and I are the same age right now. I believe we're both 31.
Yeah.
At least for us, even for me, comics were a thing, but it was already on the way out by the time we were kids. The print was starting to go out. People weren't buying them as much. The company was failing. And Marvel itself, too, was failing in the mid to late 90s, which is why they sold off all those movie rights to stay afloat. But we never got to see that.
Yeah, like the full experience of it,
Yeah, and so whenever you see these pop culture references of people collecting comic books and stuff, even though Hugo and I are knowledgeable about the comics and knowledgeable about the storylines, we were never part of that collective group. I had asked my buddy John Hall to come today. Unfortunately, he wasn't able to make it due to some family emergency. But John is part of that generation, that collective unit of people that would go out and buy. He still buys now. He's very conscious about the earth as well. So he gets all of his comics digitally every week. And, you know, he's got his rotation of things that come out and he is set. And, you know, I tried keeping up when Power Rangers had their comics. And I mean, I even fell behind. I love Power Rangers.
Yeah. But
John has kept up to this whole time, just flipping through them all. And they're not long. They're not big, but they cost I mean, it cost money. It was like $5 to $10 a book. And it was like, you know, 30 pages, colors and pictures. And it's a small snippet of a story. I'd rather just wait until the whole thing's done and buy a book at the end and then just read it. Yeah,
get the whole thing. But I mean, that's what, like, the dynamic that he got accustomed. Like, that was the way you consume it back then.
Yeah, exactly.
Not as expensive, but, like, that was the thing. It was a short story of this person. It was like a little...
little novella.
Yeah, pretty much. And it worked. Probably for your buddy... has a little bit more of significance seeing the movies, because we already grew up with TV and with other, like, this gamma or of, like, entertainment that was so spread, like, so many other stuff besides the comics. But for him, like, finally, probably for him seeing Spider-Man, that first scene where Spider-Man show up in the movie was, like, probably what Stan Lee feel, probably.
Right. To be able to see this thing that you've always saw in your head. This mental image that you've had translated,
probably dreaming. It's kind of like video, like the gamers with VR. Finally, I'm gonna be like in the game.
In it, yeah. Now, finally, I get to see that. But he was able to live his life to the point where, not that Marvel's done, but it had its culmination of what it set out to do. The whole point of it was building towards this Infinity War, and Stan at least got to see one of his finest writing moments, collaborating with other writers and authors and having everybody mesh together in a crossover event.
Yeah.
He at least gets to see it brought to the big screen. And not only did he get to see it done very well, but embraced worldwide, that people who knew about the story loved it. People who knew nothing about the story loved it.
Right. Like, it transcend
the
comic community.
And it's now part of the pop culture vernacular of everybody knows about Thanos and the snap. And it becomes this almost Greek mythology type of experience for people to learn about. Like, it's this weird thing in history now. Because, again, it's one of the highest grossing films. So not only just story-wise is it historical, but financially it's setting records. And
yes, I think... Sorry, gender. But I think at this point... the fact that it's part of the culture, like, you can't go out without making a reference or something about this universe on your day-to-day life. I think it's when you realize how big is your legacy, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, like, you can go outside and kids know now all of it.
Yeah, I mean, kids always knew about certain characters. You know, Spider-Man is one of the top-selling toys and merchandise things, and then ever since,
just as my kid,
he
find out about Spider-Man, now it's like, I want Spider-Man shirt.
and that's what's crazy to me, because I mean, for Stan to make up these things, it's a story in your head that you translate, and you always imprint a certain amount of yourself onto something, or something you saw translated into part of a story arc, or something that really meant something to you, whether it was loss or whether it was adversity being the core meaning of your character. But then to see it on little kid shirts, to see it on backpacks, to see this piece of you that was in your head now out in the world, and then people just eating it up, and now it's part of their lives. It's just like, who's your hero? It's Spider-Man. Who's your hero? I love Iron Man. Why do you like Iron Man? Because he's smart. He's rich. He has all this stuff. These kids take these things without really knowing it, and they try to exemplify those traits.
I'm laughing because you say, like, you know, seeing Spider-Man shirts, like, what about condoms? I bet somewhere.
And this is where we transition into the other part, where when Stan Lee wrote this, he wasn't writing it for adults. He wasn't really writing it for anybody else besides children and kids. That was the main consumers of these comic books.
You could tell with the message and the characters, they're always
I am Captain America.
Well, I mean, there are a few that are like, whatever. But, like, for example, like Spider-Man, Hulk, like, all of these, or most of the characters always are dealing and struggling with some problems. A personal problem. It's not like a big entity come to conquer the world.
I mean, they, like, would be, but...
That happened. But, like, they have internal issues they need to battle. like Tony Stark, it's like egocentric and has problem with alcohol or something like that.
Right, yeah.
You know, Spider-Man is like shy and bullied, and Hulk becomes this green monster nobody wants to be around.
Right, yeah, and he has trouble controlling his emotion, but mm-hmm. you're right. And that's the center of everything that people can latch onto. That's who Stan wrote for. And going to back to, unfortunately or fortunately, back to the condom thing, you know, we go from it's all about the kids to what about me? I grew up with this as a kid, and now I'm a full-grown ass adult. I still want to enjoy it. Now, I struggle with this in my job because, I mean, I have to appeal to kids who are 5 all the way to like almost 12.
That's broad.
When I put out my videos for kids and I have to talk about certain subjects, I have to make sure that it can be understood by a kindergartner, but also not too low that a fifth grader is going to be bored by it. Stan, when writing all of this, and you have this audience, when it gets brought to a bigger screen or a wider range of people that want to see it, whether you talk to a kindergartner or you talk to a 35-year-old man child that loves nothing but these comics, they both love it. And that's a very hard feat to do. Yeah. But the crazy part is they didn't even stray. Most of the times these translations or these stories don't stray too far from what Stan originally wrote or collaborated with. That's a testament of a person's ability to care about what he's doing.
Totally. And the funny thing is, like, it wasn't intended to be, oh, I'm going to make it on purpose this broad so I can make money. He just, like, that's how I feel it. And I think it was a coincidence.
Anyway. And I truly do believe Stan was flying by the seat of his pants. I truly do believe that there was nothing that was ever this grand plan for him to do or make. He was just like, I'm happy to be here and I'm happy to just put my pen to paper and do what I love. There was never really any burnout with him because most of what he was doing was being picked up and pushed out, and then it was gaining traction.
Yeah.
And he could just be himself.
Right. And again, like his passion, his ability to let his ego move and like, okay, this person can add more like good stuff for our team and create like, let the people be creative and do what they best do instead of, I'm Stan Lee and, all these.
I'm this prestigious writer that,
And I bet, he had moments of ego because once you're successful, at least at the beginning, it's hard to control it. You're not used to that spot.
Right.
But I think I will want to ask you because now that we talk all he's done, how it translates to his legacy in the world and whatever. I wasn't aware of Stan Lee. I knew the superheroes for quite a while, but I never knew about Stan Lee. What was your first revelation?
I love this question.
So this is the guy that created all this stuff that I dig so much.
So, my first introduction just to most of Marvel probably would have been like the animated Spider-Man series.
Yeah.
So I loved that. And then it was an easy transition into like something like the X-Men cartoon series. And I ate that crap up when I was a kid, like crazy. Da-da-da-da-da. Oh, it's so iconic. Yeah, yeah. I'm going to save X-Men for a different day because it's so good. But it didn't hit me until I watched an episode of The Simpsons in which the comic book guy.
All right. Yeah.
And he's like,
damn, I forget about this.
Yeah. And Stan Lee came to visit his store. Now, the audience surrogate for the episode is something like Bart and Milhouse. And they go to the store to look at the comics. And then, a comic book guy's like, hey, gasp! Stan Lee! What is Stan Lee doing in my store? And starts freaking out. And, the boys don't understand. And he's like, he's only the man who's made up all the Marvel comics. And he starts talking about it. He starts listing all of the heroes.
Yeah.
And in my head, that's when, the metaphorical light bulb went off. This man made this and this and this and this. And then he's got such this iconic face. Old man face from the time, whether you looked at him in the 80s to now, the man has not really changed. Stan Lee, his tinted glasses, his white and gray hair, his mustache. Stan Lee. So as a cartoon, I knew what he looked like. And so when I did see him in reality, I was like, Stan Lee.
Yeah.
Stan Lee.
Dang.
That was my first interaction with that man makes everything or made everything or created or had a hand in it. I don't think I understood the whole gamut of it, but that was my first real kickoff. What about you?
That's a tough one because I hear the name a couple times, but to have a precise moment, probably don't, but I think it will be after the movie start rolling out and he starts getting track on media, like, you know, this is the creator of this movie empire or like the beginning of.
So when he started making all of his cameos, like in the Spider-Man films,
more
and
like
such?
Appearances and interviews and stuff.
Okay.
When kind of like same like you, like when I finally saw it, like, oh, okay, this is the guy that I've been listening these other times.
You know,
I just like couldn't put in my face or like really make the relation until that point.
Right.
But yeah, like it was so funny that you mentioned that Simpsons episode.
Because to me,
I remember now too that one.
Because Stan Lee just ends up hanging out in comic book guy shop the entire episode. He's like, what is Stan Lee still doing at my shop? And it's still this really funny line that my brothers and I will still stay to this day. Yeah. But it's so vivid in my memory.
Right. Why do you think will be the complication of creating all this stuff in the future? One more future since, you know, all the movies are done and stuff, but what can else besides inspiration be used, or like what will happen?
I mean, Stan's already been out of the game for a long time, and he's just been riding the train of just like, hey, I'm happy to be here. I love you guys. I don't think he's added much
to late stuff
to anything other than like, hey, I read it too. I'm a fan just like you guys. I love this stuff. And I think that he was more of a supporter and just the face of Marvel. Because when you think of DC, who do you think of? There's not one specific person you think of when you say DC. When you say Marvel, you think of Stan Lee. So Stan Lee was just this mascot for this company. And I think that he was just happy to be around and just endorse it.
Probably enjoy all the attention he could enjoy when he was working.
Right. Right, yeah, and that's a good way of putting it. Kind of like retirement. Now he's just making like his victory solo tour, like wave by the country. And he still, till his dying day, he booked all of these conventions, whether it was the small ones or the big ones. That man was always there if he could be there and he was in good health or standing to do so. I think moving forward, everybody's going to feel this gap and this loss, but he wasn't in the same place like Steve Jobs was. This would be like if Steve Jobs had retired and was an old man and was just like still the face of Apple, but like wasn't really giving anything
new.
They
wish they can do that right now.
I think everybody's going to feel really sad not seeing any more Stanley cameos past what he already filmed. But I don't think creatively it's going to have any major impact. I think
just people that want to dedicate themselves to the craft, that's going to be a name that pop. For sure.
Right. But probably in the next coming 2-3 years at max, people are going to do that. But past that, I don't think that it's still going to be relevant. I think people will. I just don't think there's not going to be anybody to fill that void going forward. And I think that's going to be not a problem, but just a hurdle for Marvel going forward of like, who's really going to be that?
Well, they're going to cash in Stanley Image as much as they can.
As much as I can, and that I don't know how I feel about it, but like, time will tell. Right now, my gut says like it's a little out of bad taste if they start cashing in on a lot of that stuff.
Yeah.
But I mean, if it's tasteful, because I mean, if everybody really did love
Disney
the guy,
this is Disney. Mm-hmm. What if like the cameo is still coming out? You know, it's just they recreate him digitally.
Oh, they better not. That's in bad taste. I know he had filmed a few more cameos for these upcoming films. My thing is, when that's out, it's out. Like, when that's done, it's done. No more Stanley cameos. I'm okay. I'm okay with letting it die.
I agree with you, but, like, the company behind...
I know.
You know?
Disney, let me...
Just let me have this, please.
I'm going to put some faith in you, Disney. Please don't do this.
I'm going to Disneyland in January, so please, Disney, I'm putting money to the cow. So.
I want to speak to the man in charge over here. I have a few words about that Marvel movies.
I will email them in English and Spanish.
Oh.
Just like to make my point clear. No, but I'm going because my kid's birthday.
Aww.
So I'm, you know, I don't like Disneyland, but I'm not gonna be that like, oh, Disneyland is shit, brother. Like, let him, the kid, have fun.
Yeah,
I already had my fun when I was a kid, so
let him make his own judgments. He's gonna be that 5-year-old I meet when I have to counsel him, and he's gonna be like, eh, Mickey Mouse Corporation is very good for creative diversity.
Yeah.
Like, who's your dad? What is happening? It's like, I don't know. I think Marvel has an opportunity to fill the void with somebody like Robert Downey Jr. Or Kevin Feige, who is the, you know, showrunner for all of these movies, that they've stepped forward as well to be like the face of something.
Yeah.
Now, whether any of them want to take up that mantle is completely, I believe, up to Disney at this point. Because Stan was kind of like free publicity. Anything Stan did, he never really like requested a big, enormous amount of money. I'm sure he got paid, but it was pennies compared to what Robert Downey Jr. would be asking for.
I don't think Robert Downey Jr. would like to do that.
No, I don't think so either. I mean, I think he enjoys being Iron Man forever.
Yeah. Well, who knows?
Having that burden.
Who knows, but it seems the type of guy who wouldn't like to do that.
So that just leaves the main guy in charge, Kevin Feige. And at that point, you know, how long can you run something, even if you're passionate about it, before you're like, hey, I'd like to do something different? I mean, it's really paid off having somebody like him stay on board with everything, but at some point when he leaves, that's when you're going to start to see some fractures in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
And I think also it's hard because, you know, again, Stanley was a person to grow with the fans. He understood the fans, understood the feeling of seeing these characters, you know, developing their stories. And Feige is definitely not coming from that background.
Not entirely. He comes from as a fan, and he's passionate about it. And I think what makes Feige successful is he knows who to pick for projects. He knows who to trust. He knows what to do. But I agree that he's not exactly Stan.
Yeah, I mean, like, it surprised me that the old man, like, see through so many interviews. Like, it's just like a junket for a movie, but it was all about Stan Lee. And, like, other people, like, just the actors and stuff, they flip even, you know.
And you have to remember, like, it's not even about, like, him. He had zero part in the movie. It was just, like, one of his properties.
Yeah.
Getting adapted into a film that he's just supporting. Yeah, whether the film is terrible, like Ang Lee's Hulk, or with Eric Bana, or whether it was the masterpiece that is like Logan, he's just excited that somebody else was passionate about it, his work. And whether he knew it was hot garbage or not, like, he was just like, I'm proud of what came out, and I think that everybody's going to have fun. I think he understood the whole process of making turds as well. Like, this is a shit film, but you know what? I've made shit comics before.
Yeah.
Like, I've made mistakes too, but you know what? I'm still proud of them. I'm still, like, grateful to have that opportunity to even get that out into the world.
I think it was just the fact that he will get so excited. Like, you can think after years and years, and, like, he know from start to beginning, every single character you can think, like, this dude is probably, like, freaking tired of talking of this shit. And he will talk to you, like, almost like try to convert you to some sort of religion. You know, like, it's so excited about every single thing related to his work in comics.
You're right. And as you were talking, I mean, you look at somebody else who's still alive that we can compare him to, but who is, like, the sole proprietor of, like, judge, jury, and executioner when it comes to that universe. And the closest thing we have is George R.R. Martin for his universe of Game of Thrones. And how everybody has all of a sudden just latched onto it. The man has probably been writing since the 90s. So 20 years max. Maybe 25, 28. He's been doing this.
It's more douchey than Stanley sometimes.
No, and that's what I'm saying.
Okay.
He's tired of it. He's so over it. He just wants to write at his pace and be done. He doesn't really want to do too many interviews. You could see at first he really liked it, and he enjoyed the little, everybody enjoys
my series. Shut the fuck up. You don't know what you're talking about.
And now he's like, I don't like this at all. I don't like this pressure. I don't like this. And he's very vocal about it. And, you know, he's like, I kind of want to start writing other stuff. And then everybody gets mad at him for not finishing the book. Like, This yeah. is more akin to somebody who like loves what they're doing, but like there's a burden that comes with oh. success. And Stan Lee, you rarely were able to tell it on. He's like a kid in a candy store to talk to you about.
And if he was bothered, like he had like amazing skills to hide all that burden.
Which again is a testament of who Stan was.
Yeah.
As a person, as a professional, as somebody to share in just being a fan. Because we all have these fans. I mean, I like Spider-Man. You like Spider-Man. I have a friend who likes Spider-Man, and that friend is a dick, you know, and he's a jerk, and he will tell you that you are wrong in your opinions about the Spider-Man villain or the Spider-Man arc.
Yeah.
Stan didn't care. Stan was just like, oh, I'm so glad you like that. Like, he's like this really awesome guy you could talk to about
it's
it.
It's like that cool uncle.
Yeah.
That has all the vibe and like, chill, dude. You know, it's fine. Enjoy life.
Yeah.
Here, $100. Go for a hooker and some weed. Have fun. That kind of uncle.
Wow, your uncles are way different than mine.
No, actually, yeah. Let me think about it. Hey, exists this light possibility that a few of my uncles will tell.
Oh, my God.
But they never did.
Oh, good old Uncle Stan.
Yeah, yeah. Here's some comics. Yeah,
some comics. Go enjoy yourself.
There's some boobs and some page.
Oh, my. Yeah, and that's the other thing, too, with the way comics evolved into a hypersexualized entity. I feel like a lot of Stan's comics were very...
Yeah, definitely. A lot of, you know, tight... Even in those TV shows, X-Men.
For X-Men and stuff, but if you look back at like Stan Lee's Uncanny X-Men, uniform suits, everybody was very moderately, okayly dressed, and it wasn't anything over the top.
Right.
And that's what I like about it, because it wasn't until later that comics started to understand like, oh, our target demographic is young adolescent males. What do young adolescent males like more than superheroes punching each other? They like boobies. Lots of boobies. Make them bigger. Yeah. Make them more revealing. less clothes. Everybody knows less clothes means more armor.
That was like, I feel like in the 90s was like...
Oh, the 90s explode. Was the peak of the like...
I remember seeing Spawn. There were a few really...
Todd McFarlane.
Well, I watched the HBO series, which I think everybody should give it a chance. Obviously, it's like highly violent and like sexualized and... It's an adult comic show.
And I see. And so Stan came onto the market before like corporations and commercialism really took off and hold of like, okay, how do we expedite this process to really target just your demographic? Stan could at least create something that he wanted to create without too much outside influence. Yeah. And what we get in those mid-90s is people going like, it's got to have tits, it's got to have gore, it's got to have an antagonist to be your protagonist.
Yeah.
You know, you have to be able to have, and that's where we see the rise of Punisher, Spawn, Venom.
Yeah, just like Carnage. It's the evolution of the your demographic.
I mean, you look at any, like, go back and look at the 1950s, 60s comics and how people were dressed. I mean, they're jerky, but...
There was even like that Wonder Woman thing, you know? There was supposed to be, like abuse or something.
Oh, yeah.
From that time. So you can tell like, it's been a long way since then.
Right. What is socially acceptable and what isn't versus like the 90s, which was like, let's amp it up to be extreme because that's what sells. But that ultimately is what killed comics.
That edgy.
When Superman toted a gun. And black suit and long hair. Like, you're like, wait, Superman doesn't... Wait, why would he carry... What is happening?
Did he belong to a glam band? Like,
He looks straight out of Twisted Sister. Now Clark Kent on bass.
Right? It's like I am in a crisis identity.
Oh, God. And this is where I wish I had John to give more specific dates and more specific examples of the evolution of what comics is. Because, I mean, he got to see it all firsthand, and then you get to see it regress back to a more traditional, like, we need to look at it from a story standpoint.
Yeah, totally. And maybe we can do that in other episodes where he can be with us and give us more rich details.
Mm-hmm.
Because really, we talk generalized. And I think at the end of the day, that's like the image that we have of Stan Lee. Some dude that jump the or cross the universe comics to, you know, slowly bring it to the world, to like what we said in the beginning, to everybody, like even somebody that doesn't read books know all these characters. Mm-hmm. Like they don't have any clue of, like they don't even read any comic. They know who's Spider-Man, they know who is like the X-Men and all these characters.
And what's so strange to me is that characters like Captain America can be really popular outside of America.
And he is, I think, for the most part.
Right. And so, I mean, it blew my mind as a kid, too. And it blew my mind now that, you know, people are like chanting Captain America's name in China. And you're like, what's happening here?
Maybe he's not that popular. Like
they're like, boo.
Like in Japan, maybe.
But to have characters that you create transcend culture and transcend borders to be like, it's not just what my culture appreciates. Because, I mean, you look at things like we were talking, I don't know if it was on this recording or the one that wasn't really recording, where you talked about novellas and how that's a Latin culture thing where you have these over-dramatized things happening in a certain fashion and in a certain way. Yeah. The storytelling is a certain way. And it doesn't really translate to America. Only a certain amount of it does.
But no, not really.
Right, and it doesn't translate into, you know, Asian maybe culture.
For some reason, Italy were like a big hit.
Obviously because of... there's a cultural swing that at least there's a through line.
Yeah.
Now, certain pieces of soap opera are always going to be the same no matter where you go. But, you know, there's a reason why novellas they're not burning through the world. But you've hit something if your superheroes, what they stand for, their core beliefs, are universally understood, accepted, respected, recited, and then regurgitated back out in a way that everybody can take something away from and everybody identifies with and loves, from the hyper-stylized and very specific Captain America to the more broad Peter Parker. Everybody has been picked on. Or something
like anime. Until now, they're starting. It's making the cross and being accepted. But, you know, if you put something like Captain America or some character in anime, it's more likely that Captain America is more like, not relatable, but easier to understand. Like, you know.
Yeah, it's easier to accept. Mm-hmm. Like an audience would more likely, a general audience would more likely see Captain America as a, like, okay, I accept this, versus like watching anime and like giant robots fight. On or screen.
Like somebody like no like a one man punch.
A one punch man.
Yes.
Hey man, in my Spanish, I recite Spanish like English. I say it with the adjective before the noun, and it's the opposite way in Spanish. So you know,
but like, you know, if you put those two characters, like a character like in that anime, it's like now it's more easily accepted, or like, oh, it's fun. It's like. Mm-hmm. Is, you know, it's sarcasm, but like way back, it will be so weird.
You'd be that weird, because again, there's a certain connotation with anime.
With it
being like, it's perverted, it's weird, it's for kids. It's not for kids, it's for adults. I don't know if I should like this. The creepy kids at school like this. I hate to say that because I was a kid that liked it and I didn't want to be associated with liking it, but I really liked it. It's weird. And comic book individuals who would read it, like, we're in the same boat.
Mm-hmm.
You would be associated with this hyper detailed oriented people that just in issue number 37 Captain America said this in this one but said this in another one, and
I don't care
and half the time it would be typos. Somebody like Stan Lee's like, one time I was writing for Peter Parker and I called him something else, and people were like, was that on purpose? Was that? And he's like, no, I was writing like six other comics at the time, and I just forgot what to call him.
It's just that need of people like needing an answer for everything.
Right. But again, that was the stigma of the type of person who read a comic. But we've crossed this gigantic gap where now it's part of every, it's now cool and to like these comics.
Now we're cool motherfuckers.
And Stan Lee got to see that rise, the fall, the dip. And then the giant swell of his life's work.
Yeah.
Not just like, hey, I made this one thing this one time when I was an adult. It was like from the time he was like 19 until 95. Think about that.
Yeah. No, somebody like doesn't
70 years of your life you've committed to this thing.
It's Somebody does, like, some people doesn't even leave half of that time.
Right. You don't even work that much. Like, you work 40 years. Yeah. Boom, you're done. 70 years of this man's life was in this universe, in this place, to make it. These stories, yeah. These...
It's like, I truly compare him, like, to somebody's Steve Jobs and not, like, personalities or their, like, putting the same level of legacy, but I'm pretty sure both were, like, the misfits or, like, the bullied or, like, the ones that the people make fun of him. And then to come back and see we conquered the world, like, now what I do is the coolest shit in the world. And, like, those bullies now work for me, or, like, they're, like, the dumb people just having a average job and mm-hmm. they didn't accomplish nothing in life. You know?
Yeah.
I guess we can conclude just in that. Like, he's going to be probably number one name.
Well, I mean, because how long has it been since Steve Jobs died?
I don't have the number. Probably more than 10 years. And they still that follows.
I mean, yeah, we're still talking about Steve
Jobs. And
Jobs.
We're going to be talking about him.
Stan Lee. And Stan Lee has been out of the game for quite some time, whereas Steve Jobs died. He was still very much in the game, very much an innovator in his system. And then ripped away. I mean, Apple's been stalled since his death because he was literally the driver and the engine. Not the engine, but he was the driver.
Yeah.
Whereas Stan had been more of just a passenger these past few decades of this machine. So I don't think Marvel's going to suffer at all. But I think we're still going to talk about the legacy that he leaves behind.
Yeah.
In the same way that we've always talked about the legacy that he left behind anyway, because he wasn't really doing anything with the company per se. No. He wasn't really writing the stories anymore.
Yeah, but I think he put the basis.
Yes, like he planted those seeds.
And that's how it's going to go. Like, that's how the stories are, like, the superhero stories. Like, if you want to start somewhere, like, here are the basics, and that from there you can go on.
But to even have the wherewithal for somebody like his more beloved character, like a Spider-Man, to watch as that character literally had a reset button hit. And it's not just Peter Parker again and again and again, like somebody did, but they took him and they did something so drastically different. Did Miles Morales, a Latin American, African American character, which wasn't seen as the most popular comic book character, reintroduced, and have Stan go, "I love it," instead of being all egotistical of, like, "You're destroying the thing that I created." Right. Yeah. You're taking away everything that I put. Whereas before, you know, you can say, like, "Oh, yeah, that's my character," because you still have to use my formula of Peter Parker, Uncle Ben's dead, Mary Jane, Gwen Stacy, Betty, blah, 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 blah.
But if you think about it, then at the end of the day, that same character keep the core elements of their Spider-Man.
Yes.
You know?
But again, it's trusting and it's having that knowledge and it's having him just being able to just take a step back and going, "It's not about me. It's about what the story's trying to say.
About that character,
Yeah, and that's what I think a lot of people in entertainment kind of forget sometimes, is they get too big-headed and
more at the corporation level.
Right, and you know what? We haven't mentioned him in quite some time, but even somebody like Guillermo del Toro will be very passionate about a character, be very passionate about something. Now, when he does something, he'll do it really well, and he loves what he does. And if he gets any pushback from a corporation and can't do the vision that he wants,
it's like, "I'm out.
He's okay walking away from something."
Yeah. He will, like, mortgage his house and do it his way.
Yeah, he'll make up his own universe or make up his own version of it. And that's how we got Pacific Rim instead of Evangelion.
Yeah, exactly.
But somebody like that is a lot like Stan Lee, where it's, "I have a vision, I have these stories, I have these things, and I just want to tell them."
Yeah.
There's no other meaning, there's no other purpose. It's just, I want to tell and connect people. And obviously, because I also think it's cool. And we need more like that and less Michael Bay, more Stan Lee.
you know, save that hashtag. More, less Michael Bay, more Stan Lee.
Yeah.
There you go. You have your hashtag for the week, please, people. Brought to you by Verizon Wireless.
Oh, yeah. If you guys have noticed, we have these wonderful little ads.
So, I will tell you guys at the end about the ads and stuff just a little bit. But I think we can keep extending the talk about Stan Lee, but I think we, for the most part, we say what most of the people think about him.
Yeah.
On the comic community. So let us know what you think, guys, in the comments. And follow us on, we don't have a specific social media for this podcast because, to be honest, like, it's hard to keep track of it. As hard as it sounds, I hate in Facebook so much that I'm thinking on deleting my account. Like, I don't use it. So you can reach to me on Instagram with my name, Hugo Mesesoto. I have a YouTube channel with the same name. And there's some stuff. Mostly it's my film camera stuff, but once in a while I put an opinion on a movie or something. Where I'm thinking to put the video podcast in that channel.
Oh yeah, we didn't even mention that this go around.
The what?
We didn't mention that this go around. That was on our bad take.
Oh yeah, we have a technical problem at the beginning. But yeah, we're thinking of putting the podcast at least with a GoPro, just like, you know, one point of view, at least for now. It's hard to create a complex video setup.
And maybe too, it would just be like a snippet of like whatever was said, like a good like a good punchline. Like maybe a few snippets of the podcast. Yeah, so if you really like what you're seeing on there, then you can at least go listen to the podcast and show us some love.
But it's funny because some people want to see actually a video, like the video part.
Hey man,
even though if it's just people talking,
I get it though. Yeah. I mean, you kind of want to put a face to it, and you were talking before. You're like, I wonder what people would think, and who would my face have been up there before? But I mean, I guess you can forget, or I guess we look different than we did.
The same thing with the Stan Lee stuff.
Yeah,
like you want to put a face to that character.
Especially if you're spending so much time with them.
And also, like now with YouTube Music, people are just listening, like that's their music and podcast app.
Yeah.
So I understand why. But before we go,
you have any recommendations?
Recommendations. I don't have my phone with me. And sadly, I'm getting old and my memory is not that getting better anytime soon.
I can jump ahead of you if you need time to tap dance your way through there.
No, I will just tell him to go and jump to Narcos, the third season with our lovely friend, fucking Diego Luna.
Hey, we brought him up organically this time.
Like, actually, we have an excuse to bring it. So if you you're a fan of Narcos and you watch the first and the second season, this time is going to sort of approach the Mexican side, like how the present problems in the country with drug dealers and stuff, how it was built, how it come up to fluctuation, and all the characters involved. Because I think America they were sort of know that it was going on in Mexico. So, I mean, that's one of the main parts how drugs come to U.S. But I think it was until they kill a DEA agent.
Kiki Camarena.
America was like, no, dude, you can't do that, motherfuckers. And then it's when, like, finally start putting pressure.
Of like, yeah, we can't have this.
But, you know, it's following the story of that person, Kiki Camarena. It's pretty interesting. It's really great.
Is that who Diego Luna is? Or I haven't seen Narcos, so don't hate me.
Kiki Camarena is Peña, the actor.
Oh, Michael Peña?
Yeah.
How cool is that? I love Michael Peña. Yeah.
So it's Diego Luna. It's a really solid cast.
Now, for the third season, if I can pick your brain, because I know that you've said you've liked it before. So this is one of your more favorite series. How does the third season hold up right now as compared to the first and second?
It's pretty good. Besides some technical things that I don't think the average viewer will care. because it's not that. I spotted because I know they're using anamorphic lenses, which is like super expensive. That's what they use in like whatever most of those movies that you care and you're like, oh, I like the aesthetic. Like most likely they're using those type of lenses. So I don't know if it's the crew or not as technical or like savvy. There are some scenes that you can see like some blurriness, but it's so weird. Like it's weird to me enough to
take me out.
Like, oh, they screwed up there. Because I don't think, it's supposed to be that look, but it's almost like they didn't focus right, or it was so weird. But other than that, I mean, the actor is awesome. Diego Luna, I think I see him in one other movie when he tried to be the bad guy. Like, no, I'm not buying that. You don't look like a bad guy. But here, I think the writing is so great that it's slowly
building.
Like, you don't notice it. It's almost like, it's the same person. But there is slowly scenes where, like, start twisting and his character is evolving to what is known to be the person to start all these drug dealer empire in Mexico.
Do you appreciate my work?
Mm-hmm. Oh, Luna. No, he's doing a great job. It's funny because also, like, he's supposed to be from Sinaloa and they have a specific accent from that area. Shit. So, like, you can tell he's trying, like, it's not working.
Oh, my God.
Because he's kind of faking it. And he sounds like other character he did in a soccer movie, Rudo y Cursi. And it sounds kind
of
like...
for hating Diego Luna here, you sure watch a lot of Diego Luna.
I mean, I don't hate the guy. Like, I mean, the guy worked with fucking Steven Spielberg when he was so young. So it's not like every actor has the
opportunity
to even get... Like Spielberg, like, I want him specifically. So
he worked with Spielberg. Your wife would leave you for him. Like, all these things kind of culminate to, like, fuck you, Diego Luna.
Like, I bet if Nicole find it in real life,
you're done.
It's fine. I will sue them, and then I will get a couple meals back. So, not that bad.
God.
It's like, son, that's your real dad. Now let's sue him. Yeah.
Say anything I tell you to say in court. You're gonna get lots of money. I'll take you to Disneyland every day.
Yeah. Maybe he adopts you, so it's fine.
Oh my god.
No. But so, for the record, all the Diego Luna thing is just a joke.
Yeah. So if Diego Luna, if you're ever listening, we would love to have you on the show, but we're gonna have to say it when even you're on the show. But
Narcos 3 is good. If you like the 1 and 2, is great. Just be aware of gruesome violence and all this stuff.
Yeah,
it's
of course.
Present. What about you, Chris?
Oh, my goodness. So, I'll go over the one we just watched today. I have to put a disclaimer. You can just skip forward about a minute if you're still planning on going seeing the new Fantastic Beasts. Mm. We saw that one today. So, again, fast forward a minute, starting now. I didn't like it. I thought it was poorly named. It's the crimes of Grindelwald or something. Yeah. Either way, there are no crimes to be committed. Whatever he's done in the past was never really talked about. It's just a whole lot of like a brooding of, he's bad. He's bad.
He's bad. He's bad.
No, Michael's here, everybody. No, and so it was all this is, I don't know, it was a lot of posturing and then. Yeah. It had a lot of darker themes, which I enjoyed. I just wish the movie was about something. And this is what really upsets me with certain movies and series is each one, you better have a story to tell because making it just a small piece of the story, it felt more like an episode of Daredevil, if I could put it that way. Like, it's this pretty thing, but this is the episode that's setting up for the next episode. Because all that happened in this series was, or this movie was, we set up two different sides, the Ministry of Magic and the Rebellion. And we set up why the two want to, like, or where they are in the world. Yeah. And then we set up this third character, Ezra Miller's Credence, and who he really is in this universe. That is literally the entire basis of almost a 3-hour movie. And it's a lot of talking. You can take Newt Scamander, you could take all the other characters that came from the first movie out of this movie, and you lose zero impact of what this movie was trying to do.
Yeah.
So to me, it was almost a waste. If anything, this was like a George Lucas like scroll in the beginning of a Star Wars film where it's like, here's what's happened since you last saw your people.
Yeah, you can resume everything in that scroll, dude.
Yeah, right. And so for me, this entire thing was very... It didn't make any sense to have, to be perfectly honest. We should have named it something else, and it should have been about something. If anything, I was telling everybody at dinner before we started, if Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, the first movie, it was like a toy commercial, like a game commercial. Like, it showed you all these great things that were going to happen, and you're like, I want that thing for Christmas. This movie is the instruction manual when you open it and you're like, this is 47 pages of just things I don't care about. Yeah. Blah. And it had wonderful concepts in this movie, wonderful things that I liked, but just it didn't mean anything.
They were wasted.
Yeah, it was just now where it ends with a twist that's really good and clever.
But it's not enough.
You never could see it coming. And that's the other shitty thing about the twist is narratively, there's no foreshadowing. It's literally like
in your face.
Yeah, if we're watching a movie about aliens, all of a sudden, you know, it's really the penguin's fault. Penguins are the mastermind. You're like, wait, what?
Yeah, yeah. So why you waste all this time?
Yeah, it's not even a gotcha moment. You didn't get me. You didn't let me in.
Yeah, to start.
So to me, it fell flat. It felt really flat, and I wanted so much more. There's a lot of potential. I'm excited for the third. I don't think I'll ever go back and watch the second. It's not even like, ooh, the second one's on. I want to see that.
Now you think like if people skip the second one and they just jump from the first one to the third
one. All you need to know is the twist at the end. That's it. Mm-hmm. You watch.
So just keep everything just
Technically, if all you watched was the last 15 minutes of the film.
You will be fine.
You're fine. You know Johnny Depp is bad. You know Jude Law is Dumbledore. Here they are. They're going to, you know, their rebellion. The good guys are meeting the bad guys in the graveyard. Okay, press play. Boom. Watch it to the end. You're ready for number three.
Well.
So I would say go ahead and pass on it wholeheartedly. Wait till that comes out on DVD. Yeah. That is not worth a full matinee ticket. Yeah.
All right. Unless you're a super hardcore fan. I don't know.
I would even say if you're a hardcore fan, you are going to come out of this movie just wanting more. You're going to kind of kick yourself.
It's kind of like the Walking Dead effect. Like, oh, surprise, we have this twist to the end.
Yeah.
Like, you know, almost, like it feels almost like they're laughing at you. Like, why you need to do that?
And had they done something more clever with it, the twist still would be just as impactful. It would be just as great. If anything, it's a great twist. It's a great idea.
We can say it's just a flat movie, period.
It's like, a flat movie, period, with... I feel like what they did was work backwards. They started with the twist and then were just like, okay, how do we build to this? And then just work their way backwards until they found like, okay, we're far enough away that this can be the start of the movie and let's go forward now.
Right. Oh,
it just...
So that's just not no.
Yeah. No. It's a no for me. Yeah.
Well, that's it, people. Two things to like, maybe if you don't know what to watch, even though we have unlimited entertainment in our hands, our problem now it's like how we curate all this shit. And we're not trying to curate, but we're trying to give you options. Or maybe we're curing, or maybe we have an algorithm, a secret algorithm.
That's right.
Take that, Netflix. It's called Diego Luna algorithm.
And it's literally just Hugo and I watching whatever you click on.
But yeah, guys, thank you for listening. Let us know if you like the ads. I know, you know, we want to live in a free ad world, but at the same time, it will be nice, even not to make us rich. But I don't know. Invest in the equipment or like be able to buy us food for the dinner every single Sunday. That will be like awesome. But yeah, keep us in touch. We want to hear your comments.
We do. Anything is appreciated. We appreciate, I mean, whether it's the star ratings or you guys actually write us a constructive criticism down
below. That will be awesome. That will be awesome to actually see. That's like a finding goal in the internet, a constructive
criticism other than
these guys suck. You suck, motherfucker.
I love Diego Luna.
How you dare talking like that to Diego Luna? They're going to tell me that I'm like, what's it called? I'm going against the country because I'm bashing the old. You're not Mexican anymore.
Yeah, you don't belong here. Bring back Stephanie and Sydney.
Which Sydney will be back probably next week. But that's it, guys. Have fun.
Hashtag Halos.
Hashtag Halos. I'm not going to say any vulgarity this time.
Less Michael Bay, more Stanley.
We just finish with that. So have a good night. Adios, people.
Bye.